For supporters of campaign finance reform and critics of money in politics, there hasn't been a lot of positive news lately. Court decisions at the state and federal levels have ended limits on campaign money to candidates and to outside organizations.
Our next guest has been making the case for reform for years, and now he's trying a new tactic, a political action committee that's raising money to support candidates who pledge to help get money out of politics. Lawrence Lessig is with us. He's law professor at Harvard. His books include Republic Lost, How Money Corrupts Our Congress and a Plan to Stop It. And he's the founder of the new Mayday Political Action Committee. Lawrence Lessig, welcome to the show.
Great to be here.
Well, before we get to the how of what you're doing, let's start with the why. Can you make the case that money, political money, has a corrupting influence on politics and Congress in particular?
Well, it's important to be clear about why or how it has this influence. The problem with American politics today is that we have outsourced the funding of campaigns to the tiniest fraction of the 1%. I estimated for my book that it was about 150,000 Americans who are the relevant funders of campaigns, the funders who fund at a level large enough that candidates really care about what their particular views are. 150,000 is about the same number of people in the United States who are named Lester. Right, so we outsource the funding of campaigns to this tiny, tiny fraction of the 1%, but members of Congress spend anywhere from 30 to 70% of their time talking to this tiny, tiny fraction of the 1% to get the money they need to run their campaigns. That creates the corrupting influence. It's not corruption in the old-fashioned, you know, bribery or Rob Blagojevich sense of corruption. It's corruption in plain sight because they are so obsessively focused on how to get money from this tiny, tiny fraction, that they lose touch with how to give the rest of America what the rest of America cares about.
And as we mentioned, the court system, especially the U.S. Supreme Court, has been loosening restrictions on campaign money, including the total aggregate amount someone that you're talking about could give to multiple campaigns. They say it's a form of free speech. Political spending is free speech. Is it?
Yeah, so I think the Supreme Court has actually done a lot of damage here. It's made it much harder for Congress to try to address this problem. But I personally agree with some of the core principles the court has articulated. I certainly think that the government needs to be tested. One needs to be skeptical whenever the government tries to regulate speech, especially political speech. And I don't have any hesitation in saying that if the government's going to try to control speech or restrict it, it needs to meet a very, very high standard. But the critical point to recognize is that everything the Supreme Court has done to strike down limits on speech has really nothing to do with the kind of problem that I'm talking about, which is the problem of how we fund elections. Because we could change the way we fund elections tomorrow, and the Supreme Court would have no problem with it, right? So there are Democratic proposals for how to change the way we fund elections. There are Republican proposals. Republican proposals are basically voucher proposals, where you basically give voters vouchers, $50, $100, maybe even higher, that they can use to give to candidates who agree to fund their campaigns with small contributions only. The Democratic proposals are more matching grant proposals, where if you donate $100, it gets matched by the government at 5-to-1 or 9-to-1, depending on the proposal. Those two kinds of solutions would radically increase the number of funders to campaigns, and therefore would reduce the influence of that tiny, tiny fraction of the 1%. And all of that, the Supreme Court has said again and again, is perfectly legal under our Constitution, because it's not about restricting anybody's speech. It's just about enabling a wider range of people to participate in the political speech.
So to nail down the goal, you're not looking for new laws that would restrict someone's ability to give money. You're looking for laws that would expand the number of people who could give some money to campaigns.
Absolutely, because the structure we've got right now has produced this radically unstable system of government. And it's unstable for Democrats as well as for Republicans. This is not partisan. No matter what side you are on, the thing to recognize is you cannot get from your government what you want in a sensible way so long as this is the way you fund elections. I mean, Democrats see this when they think about like climate change legislation, which it's obvious we will never get climate change legislation until we change the way campaigns are funded. Even Jim Hansen, the leading scientist pushing for climate change legislation, in his latest book says the number one reason we cannot get climate change legislation is because of the way campaigns are funded. But also on the right, you know, if you're on the right and you want smaller government or simpler taxes, you need to recognize that those objectives are impossible in a world where Congress benefits from more expansive regulation and more complicated taxes, because those two things make it easier for members of Congress to pull change that flush money into the political system. So whether you're on the right or the left, this way of funding elections guarantees our government can't do anything sensible and leaves us in this stalemate of partisan extremism that has totally just made it impossible for our government to function.
So that takes us to the May Day PAC. What is it and what are you trying to do?
Well, about a year ago, a bunch of us said, what would it take to win a Congress committed to fundamental reform in 2016? You know, it's hard to imagine it being done, but just, you know, if you went district by district and you figured out where members of Congress are, and if they're not with you, then what it would take to beat them, and how many would you have to beat to get to a majority in both houses, or at least 218 in the House and 60 votes in the Senate, because the Senate's a supermajority body, the way it functions today. The question was, what would that take? How much would that cost? And the firm that we retained for doing that said, well, here's the number, and it was a very big number, much less than I thought it would be, about a third of what I thought it would be. But anyway, they said, this is the number. But they said the critically important thing you need to do is in 2014, you need to run a serious campaign in about five districts so that we can learn which messaging works, what's the way to intervene in a way that rallies people to this cause. But more importantly, that sends a message to the rest of Congress that we're going to be back in 2016 and you better be on the right side of this issue. So the firm sort of looked at that and said it would be about $12 million to be able to run those five campaigns. And to beat incumbents or to support challengers or oppose challengers who oppose reform, but candidates to make these campaigns about reform, be about $12 million. And someone suggested to me, why don't you try to kickstart that? Why don't you try to raise it in small-dollar contributions to measure how much the public really cares about this issue? So we announced a kind of complicated structure. I said, we're going to try to raise $1 million in 30 days for the purpose of demonstrating to people that people care about this issue. And if we raise that $1 million, then I'll find ways to match it. So we'll have $2 million. And then we're going to try to raise $5 million in 30 days. And if we get that $5 million raised, then I'd find $5 million to raise that. And so in those two ways, we would get to the $12 million. Now, when I announced this in April or in March at the TED conference, people told me, you know, it's a great thing you're trying to do, but you're insane. You're just insane. There is no way people are going to open up their credit card and support you to raise $1 million to support the idea of trying to take on money in Congress. But I said, look, we got to try because our government has failed. We have no government. We have no effective government. If they're not going to change themselves, we've got to try to do it. So on May 1st, May Day, we launched our May Day call, basically a May Day on this democracy, May Day as in, you know, rescue us. We opened it on May 1st with no promotion, with no advertisement, basically a blog post, a web page, and tweets and emails among friends. And within 2 days, we had raised $300,000. And then the demand was so great that our servers melted, and this incredible team of volunteer techies, geeks from around the country got together to rebuild the servers so that we would have a robust enough system to bear the demand that we saw. And so we reopened after the weekend, and we raised the $1 million in 13 days, basically more than 2 weeks ahead of schedule. Astonishing everybody. We raised from 13,000 people. Average contribution was about $75. The median was about $50. We had more than 3,500 people who gave $20 or less. This was the most incredible response to a call for this kind of reform that this reform community has seen anywhere. And what we're hoping to do starting on June 4th is to launch the second round, which will raise $5 million in 30 days, or by Independence Day, we want to be in a position to be able to declare once again our independence and to try to push for a kind of Congress we have a reason to trust.
We're talking to Lawrence Lessig, talking about the new May Day Political Action Committee aimed at reducing the influence of money, wealthy people in particular, on politics. Coming up in just a few, we'll find out what they're going to do with the money they raised, how they would target it on congressional campaigns.
And you can join in, too. What do you think about the role that campaign money plays in American politics these days? Do you have a question as to how the May Day PAC would work? Is it enough to overcome what many see as an overwhelming tide of money that is coming from a very small portion of the population? Give us a call. Join in the discussion at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post comments on the Central Time Facebook page.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Gene Purcell. We continue our conversation now with Lawrence Lessig about campaign finance and his new project, the May Day Political Action Committee.
The goal of the committee, raising money now and then eventually supporting congressional candidates, just a few in this cycle and a lot more in 2016, hoping to bring candidates into Congress who support fundamental changes in the way campaigns are paid for in this country. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you think under the current system, money in politics has, in effect, a corrupting influence? Is it bad for our ability to get things done in Congress? Do you want to see some kind of change? And what do you want to ask Lawrence Lessig about the May Day Political Action Committee? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you could post on our Central Time Facebook page. So, Lawrence, you've raised the money, say, at some point in the future. You're looking for candidates. Say I'm running for Congress, which I won't be. What would I have to do to convince you that I am on board with reform? I'm a candidate worth backing.
Well, in 2014, we're picking races that will both teach us enough so we can produce the type of data in 2016 that will convince skeptical people that we know how to win a Congress committed to reform, but also candidates who, if we beat them or if we make them win, will send a kind of shockwave through D.C. where they think, wow, we didn't think this issue was important, but the fact that so-and-so is not coming back or the fact that so-and-so is coming to Washington is a pretty good measure of just how important this issue is, at least if it's supported by this kind of citizen-funded super PAC. So that means it's kind of complicated. So we're looking at a whole bunch of districts, a whole bunch of calculations. The firm that, you know, we hired to do this initial calculation had an initial proposal of 5, but what we're going to do when we get close to being confident that we have the money we need for 2014 is we'll run the numbers again and we'll see where it makes sense. But we need to make both a powerful statement to the public, but also a meaningful statement to us so that we are confident that when we go into 2016, we have a campaign that we can win and one that we can go to the public and say, you should support this because we believe we can win.
And for all intents and purposes, this would be a political action committee subject to the same laws as anything else we call a PAC or a super PAC.
Yeah, so it's a super PAC. So that's the irony, right? Because what a super PAC can do is it's an independent political action committee, which means it can't coordinate with any candidate. So if you called me as a candidate and said, what do I need to do? I would say, I'm sorry, I'm not able to talk to you. But it's an independent political action committee. But what's special about super PACs, ever since a decision by the D.C. Circuit Court in a case called Speech Now, is that super PACs are able to accept unlimited contributions. It's not just that they can spend unlimited amounts, but they can accept unlimited contributions. So a super PAC can accept a $1 billion contribution if a billionaire wants to give it to them. Depending on how the billionaire channels his money, he can actually give him $1 billion and never identify who that billionaire is because it can come through another entity that doesn't reveal its funders. So it's a particularly vicious creature in the character of our current democracy, because what it does is further concentrate the number of relevant funders of campaigns. In 2012, 132 Americans gave 60% of the super PAC money that was spent in that election cycle. So forget the Lesters. You know, we're talking about a tiny, tiny fraction of the Lesters who are the most powerful super PAC contributors. And so what we say is, okay, look, the rules say there can be super PACs. We're going to use the rules to change the rules. We're going to use the rules to build a movement that's powerful enough to get a Congress that will find a way to change the way elections are funded, and eventually, we think, get the court to adopt systems that make it, not so you eliminate independent political action committees, but that you make it so contributions to independent political action committees are not unlimited the way they are right now.
We'll go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. We have Javier on the line in Oshkosh. Javier, hi.
Hi. Yeah, my question would be is, what is the difference or what are similarities with this other movement that's called Move to Amend? It's focusing on our legislators to also change the way contributions are being given to them for elections, because we feel that the elections are, or they feel that the elections are being controlled by money. Mm-hmm. I guess, is there a difference, or are they both going towards the same goal?
Javier, thanks for the call. Lawrence Lessig?
Yeah, so Move to Amend is an incredible organization that has done more than I think any other to rally people to the cause of fighting for fundamental reform. The particular way in which Move to Amend is trying to do that right now has been focused on getting states to pass resolutions that say to Congress, Congress, please pass a constitutional amendment to force fundamental reform into the system. Now, the product of that has been to bring literally millions of people into this movement, and I have enormous respect for what they're doing. But what the May Day PAC is trying to do is a little different. Though, you know, I certainly support the idea of amending the Constitution in the right way to fix the problems the Supreme Court has created, we think the first thing we should do is to change the way elections are funded. And we can do that without amending the Constitution. So to amend the Constitution requires Congress pass a proposed amendment with two-thirds vote, which means 67 senators would have to vote for it. And my fear is that, you know, it's my grandchildren who will see 67 senators vote for the idea of reversing something like Citizens United. But it's much easier to imagine bringing about a Congress that could pass, that could change the way we fund elections with a simple majority vote. So I think we're both aiming at the ultimate same objective. But what we're trying to do is to add a different technique, a different tactic, that in the short run we think can be much more effective because it could bring about this fundamental change just through a change in Congress.
Thanks for the call, Javier. Do you see this as a genuinely bipartisan thing? Would May Day PAC, if and when funded, support Democrats and Republicans?
Yes, we definitely. What I believe is there is no way to win this in Congress unless you have support from Democrats and Republicans alike. Now, the Democrats have more people right now who are co-sponsoring bills that are fundamental reform bills. But when you get outside the Beltway, I think the support among Republicans, at least the polling that we've seen, grassroots Republicans, is as strong for the idea of ending the system of crony capitalism or a system of corruption, as McCain used to talk about it in Washington, as are Democrats. So I think the problem in Washington is a problem that Democrats and Republicans have both contributed to. I don't think either party is innocent here. And whether or not you're a Democrat or Republican, I think if you're living outside the Beltway, you need to be pushing your candidates to support this kind of reform. And we've been recruiting Republicans, and absolutely, we will be supporting candidates to make sure that when this vote comes up after 2016, there will be a significant number of Republicans joining Democrats to make sure that this reform gets passed.
We've got Sean in Kenosha on the line now. Sean, hi.
Hey, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to comment about I remember hearing about a big push to expand voting hours, and also there was a movement called Why Tuesday. You know, I work from 6 to 6. I have a hard time going to vote, and I am very interested in politics. I'd like to vote on Saturday.
Sean, thanks for the call. Not much time left. May Day PAC focusing on the money issue. Expanded voting access, is that maybe a sidebar you'd be interested in, Lawrence?
Oh, that's an incredibly important issue. And, you know, the reality is there are about 15 really important reforms we've got to bring about. But what we've asked is, what's the first reform? What's the first reform that makes the other ones possible? And I believe we have to change the way we fund elections to get to a system where you don't have such a hyper-partisan system that might be able to consider some of these other sensible forms, which I think obviously changing the way people vote is an incredibly important one.
Lawrence Lessig, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was Lawrence Lessig, Harvard Law professor. We've got a link to his website, the Mayday Political Action Committee, and you can find it on the Central Time Facebook page and leave your thoughts and comments while you're there.